Hello and welcome to My Psychotherapy Career, a podcast where we explore the different therapeutic settings our members work in and how they came into their career. I am Jenna Rashid, the Digital Engagement Officer at UKCP. Our host, Emily Bridges, is the Head of Content and Engagement at UKCP, overseeing all our communications to members and the public, as well as our policy and research work. In this episode, Emily speaks to UKCP systemic and family psychotherapist Gladys Ellis. After entering the NHS as a mental health nurse, Gladys quickly felt drawn to the family relationship dynamic she was witnessing in her role. The impact of family therapy captivated Gladys, and she decided to pursue training. After qualifying, she began working in an NHS CAMS team, where she quickly noticed the level of young people entering for disordered eating. Seeking to know more, Gladys explored training opportunities, later beginning her secondment to the Maudsley Centre for Child and Adolescent Eating Disorders, where she was later invited to work. Now a specialist in eating disorders, Gladys is also a supervisor, trainer and consultant. In this episode, we speak to Gladys about her journey pursuing a career in psychotherapy.
Hi Gladys, thank you so much for joining me today. First up, I'd really like to know what drew you to a career in psychotherapy.
Great, it's lovely to be here with you, Emily. I think looking back, for me, it was a real kind of calling, a passion to want to help other people, in particular people struggling with mental health challenges. I come from a place where for a long time, mental health difficulties are viewed in a very different way than they are in the West. In the particular context I am from in Zimbabwe, mental health difficulties are often attributed to people who maybe have done something wrong, in particular to parents, or people who may be possessed by evil spirits, or having wronged the community in some way. So there's never been positive connotations. Things are changing now. You know, people who are depressed are able to access services, talking therapy. I don't know if any of you have heard of the Friendship Bench. These are really kind of short-term interventions, and depression, as it is known in Zimbabwe, is kufungisisa, which means to deeply think about things in a way that could be counterproductive. So mental health difficulties are now being recognized, and people with psychosis are also being able to access pharmacological interventions and community-based talking therapies. So going back again to my interest and what drew me to psychotherapies, I wanted to be really part of the process of supporting people when they are in difficult time with their lives. And hope is an infectious thing. It's so important as a human condition for us to feel hopeful about life. And when people are struggling with mental health difficulties, hope can be one of those things that can be very difficult to hold on to. And I wanted to be part of the crowd, the tribe that dedicate my life, which is what I have done, to supporting people in a psychotherapeutic way.
You now specialize in eating disorders. So what kind of prompted you into that area?
So I'd been qualified as a systemic family psychotherapist for about 3 or 4 years. I was working in a generic CAMS team in Oxley's, and took some time off because I wasn't well. I came back to work and realized that we had a number of young people who were coming quite unwell with restrictive anorexia nervosa. There was a skills gap within myself. You know, family therapy has always been the intervention of choice. I had gaps and lack of knowledge and expertise really to supporting these families. So often families or young people ended up being admitted. And we know from research that inpatient admissions for under 18s, unless it's very targeted and goal-oriented and it's part of an intervention during a young person's journey in recovery with anorexia, it can be counterproductive. But in the late 90s and early noughties, which was, when I was qualified as a family therapist, a lot of young people ended up being in inpatient admissions because there weren't any robust specialist outpatients interventions for young people. So family therapists like me, as I said, we didn't have the expertise. So I came back to work, and I was doing a review with my boss at the time. And I said, I'm curious about eating disorders. I am concerned that these young people are ending up going to hospital and there's not a whole lot we can do for them here in a community comes. And I had heard actually from a trainee who was a certificate student who was on placement with me from the Maudsley, who was raving about this multifamily group therapy that was being done for young people and their families with anorexia. And that coupled with this kind of gap in knowledge really sparked my interest. So I went to the Maudsley on a secondment. It was meant to be 6 months just to get some insight and to see if I could bring back any learning to my comms team. But I ended up staying for 9 months at the Maudsley. Absolutely loved it. Learned a whole new way of working with families with this particular struggle. Towards the end of my secondment, the senior team there, had big visions about how they wanted the service to expand, clearly saw something in me and felt that I, could be quite a central member of their team in this vision. And so a position came up and I got hired as the first full-time member of that team. And so, yeah, so that's kind of what drew me to eating disorders, and I have stayed ever since. This is my 21st year as a specialist systemic family psychotherapist in the team. I'm a consultant there, and no one day is the same.
You've kind of already touched on this a bit, but after gaining that kind of interest in eating disorders, how did you go about finding opportunities for yourself in that field?
Yeah, so when I look back, I think a real kind of determination and, kind of single-mindedness about wanting to learn something, to gain more knowledge. I actually just reached out to people. I still have my email that I wrote to Professor Eisler saying, I'm a family therapist in Oxley's, asking if you can give me an opportunity to come and do a secondment at the Maudsley. So for me, when I look back on my whole career, it was about me going out of my way to look for opportunities, to network, to not be shy, to ask, because people can only say no. I really seeked out the opportunities and went out of my way. Learning is not always an easy thing, in particular when you're already qualified or you have a position or a role of being credited, you are a qualified somebody. To be in a learning position can be quite nerve-wracking. But I was so open and so interested.
So even though it was kind of out of your comfort zone, it was something that you just felt you needed to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's when we are out of our comfort zone. Is the time actually that we learn a lot about ourselves. And I think it's a human condition that if we ever stay in our comfort zone and in things we are familiar with, life becomes boring and we can switch off because things can seem so the same. And actually, I think throwing yourself in the deep end now and again and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone is the only way sometimes we grow as human beings. And we grow as therapists because actually we are expecting our patients and our young people to be able to tolerate the uncertainty of learning different ways of coping with whatever struggles they have. And if we expect that of other people, I think it's important that we expect that of ourselves too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You mentioned earlier that you develop new ways of working. So how do you work with children and families now?
Family therapy is the gold standard way of working with young people with eating disorders. NICE says it, and we know from clinical experiences that you can't really support a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old alone without their family resources and their family support around them. So at the Maudsley, we've developed a model. It's a four-phase model. I think some people know it as FBT. We call it FTAN, which is Family Therapy for Anorexia Nervosa. It's manualized, but the therapists bring a lot of their own kind of skills and knowledge to the work. We know that works. We've then developed the multifamily therapy for both anorexia and bulimia nervosa, where it's an intensive way of working, where we have like an introductory evening the week before the group starts. We invite a family and a young person who've been through a similar group, and we do an introductory evening that includes a conversation with this family, maybe some psychoeducation about how the illness impacts the family and family relationships and how people get better. And then we have a whole week, a 5-day intensive week where families come. A central part of that is being with them, being alongside them, guiding, coaching, supporting them during their worst nightmare, which is the meal times. So we do snacks, we do lunches together, we mix up families, all in a very kind of supported and psychotherapeutic way. We do groups for parents alone, groups for young people, lots of kind of techniques that we use that are eclectically borrowed from, other modalities like psychodrama. We do sculpting, we do, family trees. We do all sorts of kind of interventions. But the notion is that we are bringing a group of families who share similar struggles together to support them find solutions, learn from each other, with us facilitating and guiding and supporting them to try out new behaviors, to try out new ways of relating, to try out new ways of being with their kids that they might not have contemplated. So, for example, on one of the days, we do what we call foster meals, where we mix up different parents or carers with a completely different child. Families go off and eat with this new young person. And what's fascinating about that exercise is that young people are able to have a completely different conversation over a meal, which is often quite anxiety-provoking, distressing for them, a pattern that they are in with their family. But with this new family, they are able to eat as well as have curious conversations about their interests, their life, little fun facts about this and that, just normal conversations. And what often young people and their parents reflect is that ability to remember again that it is possible, because when a young person is so ill with anorexia, people lose the identity of their family. Everything becomes about the meal and about the distress and about the anxiety and about the guilt. That actually doing that exercise in an MFT, people are able to discover that those really strong emotions and patterns and dynamics can happen. But at the same time, it is possible still to have these normal conversations. And often things change for lots of people after that exercise. It's like, wow, at this meal time, we were able to try out this new board game or to do this with the family. Can we try and do that on our own at home? So I can give you so many different examples of kind of different activities we do where families, after a while, they come back and they are like, wow, We were so stuck in this pattern, we stopped being able to see the bigger picture of what life potentially could be and will be when our young person is better, but that we are, those agents of change. So it's such a rewarding, it's very intensive, but it's such a rewarding way of working with families.
So you've had a career in the NHS and then you started working in private practice. How do you find this new way of working?
Private practice is hugely different from working in the NHS. I guess for me, private practice at the moment is a tiny bit of what I do. I do that on a Saturday morning. What works better for me is I've joined a group of clinicians. I've joined an agency where I work basically like a contractor. So I don't have to worry about the room bookings, all the admin, finding the referrals, invoicing. This is all done for me. And all I need to do is my paperwork and referrals and discharges and updates to GPs or other clinicians involved with the family and do the work, which is really quite nice. I think things took off quite a lot in the pandemic because families were really, really struggling. And I know that in my NHS work, we had, seriously, I'm not joking, a 300% increase in referrals. And at the time, because we were taking self-referrals, there was a huge need for families to be seen. But the nice thing about working privately, as I say, is that it's freeing, there's a lot of independence. At the moment, I don't know about other people who work in the NHS. We have an issue with rooms and in private practice because everything is so kind of organized and this is not an issue. And you're also getting people who are motivated and people who often are coming to you because they really want to see you. It was a little bit uncomfortable for me in the beginning, the whole money conversation. Because working in the NHS, I know that money is involved, but as a clinician and a therapist, this is something we are, I guess, a bit cushioned from because there's a whole other layer of people who deal with finance. And I think being able to kind of face squarely, the conversation with yourself about what am I really worth, one finds oneself, having a some deeper conversations about, am I worth that much? There's a discomfort, but I think it will dissipate over time.
You're moving towards retirement now. How are you preparing for this transition?
At the moment, in my job role as a consultant in my NHS team, I am doing a lot of supervision with senior systemic family psychotherapists. Not just in eating disorders, but the majority of my supervision is in eating disorders. I also, a little bit of my private practice, I supervise people internationally. So, people from Malta, Dubai, France. I really want to continue to build that portfolio of being a supervisor. And I train as well in part of my NHS job role. But that's something as well that I would quite like to keep doing private work, as I have said. But also mentoring, being mentored by lots of different people and being supported was something that was really key in my career growth and personal growth. And that's something I want to be able to do. And it's not a chargeable, but a really rewarding part of being a mature family psychotherapist, I think. So I want to mentor, supervise, consult, as well as do a bit of private practice.
It sounds like you have an incredible amount of experience that you can pass on to those people that are lucky enough to be mentored by you. What advice would you give to someone who is interested in specializing in eating disorders?
So I would say, don't rush to be a specialist. I think it's so important to spend time building a strong, solid foundation, ideally in a multidisciplinary team, ideally in the NHS, if one can, or in social care, or, in a place where you will get a lot of support. I think it's so important that one gets and develop confidence and skills and knowledge and ability to manage risk, but also be really open to asking for help and to know your limits. I think a lot of people sometimes jump in to specialize, but I think the role does really demand that you have all the tools, you have more than one tool in that toolbox to be able to support families. Often, parents come sometimes and, they really need holding themselves. They are feeling so distressed and so destroyed in their sense of parental instincts when a child is not able to eat. It's hugely distressing to parents. And so, one needs a lot of kind of different skills and ability to support people. So I would say encourage people to work in generic roles before they specialize, and definitely to be really aware that going into private practice when one is newly qualified can be really risky, both for themselves as clinicians, but also for the population that you'll be working with.
I guess a lot of what you've just shared, you can only know in hindsight. And when you look back now, is there anything else that you wish you knew before you entered psychotherapeutic training?
That's a really good question. I think the most important thing was that, one needs to do a lot of work on yourself to be of service, to be of sound service to the people that you're going to be helping. In systemic family psychotherapy, having personal therapy is not mandatory, but it's also about how one looks after yourself. It needs to be a priority.
In terms of kind of the training itself, how did you manage the logistics, the costs, the time? These are all things that we hear, but it's difficult to balance. How did you do that?
Yeah, a really good question. So for me, I think doing part-time training alongside working in the mental health field in NHS was the best combination for me. So it was taxing, it was a lot of hard work. I'm sure there are other people who've told you. So I remember going back when I qualified as a mental health nurse. I remember taking my first job as a staff nurse. But because I was so captivated by family therapy, which I'd been introduced to in my last placement, I was like, I want to find out more. I was so hungry for it. I took myself every Tuesday evening, I would request an early morning shift so I could have the afternoon off. And I would go along to listen to these lectures. They were like 10 introductory lectures to family therapy. Basically, just all kind of different schools of thought, listening to papers, participating in discussion. It was just like that. So for me, because I was so single-minded about wanting to learn it, I made time. A lot of my work was in my annual leave time. I would request my shifts when I was working, as I say, as a mental health nurse to fit with the placement days, for example, when I was working in Paddington Green. I started training when I was like 26, and I qualified and finished everything when I was 28. At the same time, I was starting a family. So there were lots of changes in my own life cycle that were happening alongside a kind of training as a systemic family psychotherapist. So in terms of finances, for my master's, I had to take a career development loan. I don't know if the banks still offer that, but I remember that they were offering career development loans, and then you didn't need to pay it back until I was hired as a family therapist and earning a certain amount of money. I had a lot of family helping out. I spoke to my managers and asked for time. Yeah, as I said, savings, career development loans. But for me, I was so interested in the way of working that I threw everything I had, including, my negotiating skills with my family and with external people to support me to achieve my goal.
It sounds like there's a lot of kind of passion and dedication and teamwork, I guess, to get you through that training period.
Absolutely, all those things, Emily. Yeah.
What advice would you give that you haven't already given today to someone considering training as a psychotherapist or a psychotherapeutic counselor?
I look back on how far I have come now and kind of the support I have given to people. So if I think back to my, reflect on my job at the Maudsley, working with young people with eating disorders, is that, people get better, people change, and young people now, some of them have families of their own or they've joined the helping profession in the NHS or privately. They are doctors, they are therapists, they are nurses, they are social workers. I just think it's a really rewarding career that really helps, people change things for them to, have that hope and that belief again that, life can be different is the most priceless way of being a human being in this society, I think.
You mentioned change there a couple of times for the people that you work with, but how has a career in psychotherapy changed you?
Oh, a ton. When I look back again, I think I am incredibly self-aware. I have this awareness and understanding that I have way more capacity as a human being, to help others in a way that I wouldn't have thought if I hadn't been in this job. When I look back, I think whenever I'm faced with any situation in my own life, the glass is always half full. I never feel that nothing is impossible in life.
So finally, what does being a UKCP member mean to you?
Oh, a lot. I feel that I am a tribal member of a tribe that holds dear incredibly important values about maintaining public safety, in particular when people are seeking help at a time when they are really vulnerable. And I think UKCP represents quality. It's like a kite mark for quality and rigorous training and accreditation. For you to be a registrant, you're committed to keep yourself abreast with research, with development, with things that are changing, in the way that we support people with mental health difficulties. And I think to be part of that is an honorable thing.
Gladys, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed hearing about your career and your thoughts and reflections. So thank you.
Thank you, Emily. It was a pleasure.
That was UKCP systemic and family psychotherapist Gladys Ellis speaking to Emily Bridges, our head of content and engagement. If you're interested in exploring training, then you can visit our psychotherapy training page, where you can find information on psychotherapy as a career, as well as the different training pathways available to you. Just go to www.psychotherapy.org.uk slash psychotherapy dash training. All episodes of My Psychotherapy Career are available on our website, psychotherapy.org.uk. You can also subscribe to our channel, UKCP, on your favourite streaming platform. Do you have any feedback you'd like to share with us on this episode or any from our series? Get in touch with us at communications@ukcp.org.uk. Join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.